You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
For Dear Science this week, we're joined by our expert, Dr. Kushla McGovern. How are you, Kushla? What have we got for us today?
Well, I missed a bit of an opportunity today, actually. So happy World Quantum Day today. So if anyone's checked out the Google Doodle today, you'll notice that it's World Quantum Day, but no quantum stories today. So today we're talking about a couple of studies that have come out of basically failed sort of drug innovation trials, male contraceptive and looking at nerve growth factor and its relationship with osteoarthritis. And then we'll final one is about kakapo hatchlings and why this year is awesome. So first, male contraceptive.
Fun.
So perhaps one of the most societally impactful sort of scientific innovations has been the female oral contraceptive, right? It was is this pill that's a mixture of estrogen and progesterone, so two hormones that basically thickens cervical mucus so that sperm can't get to the egg and also stops ovulation so there's no egg produced. And it's had major, major implications. There's now various options for female contraceptive. However, male contraceptive, not been so much. There's been a lot of effort, but not a lot reach market. So basically restricted to condoms and vasectomies in the moment. And so there is a lot of work going on about how to approach this problem. So there's approaches that are about affecting how sperm swim, about how they develop, basically trying to block them from leaving the body, not through the physical method of condoms, but within your body. And this new study is actually a proof of concept about a new approach that's non-hormonal, because many of the female methods of contraception are hormonal and they do have side effects and there are various issues, and this is why it's good that there are options, because not everything works for everyone. But this drug that they looked at, called JQ1, was basically, it was initially looked at as for a treatment for cancer and inflammatory diseases. But it was a failure in terms of the side effects were just too severe. So this drug will never actually be used in people. So this was a mouse study, but what they had noticed was with this JQ1, it actually disrupted what's called meiosis. So meiosis is the process of cell division that produces gametes, the sperm or the egg, right? So the sex cells. And there's a phase in this meiosis called prophase one that this JQ1, this drug, interrupts. And so what they were interested in is, can you actually treat mice with this and stop sperm production, then stop the treatment and the mice start producing sperm again? Because, of course, you want these to be reversible, right? This is kind of the holy grail of male contraceptive, is a method that doesn't totally eliminate reproductive possibility. So that's what they did. They basically injected some mice with this drug for 3 weeks. Sperm production was stopped. Then they stopped treating them. And then within 6 weeks, these mice actually were producing normal sperm again. And then they were able to mate and produce healthy babies that were also fertile. Because that's the other thing you've got to check, right? That the progeny are also still going to be fertile. And so they were like, okay, this is kind of cool. We now kind of have this proof of concept of a different way to approach this problem. Now what they're doing is they're actually looking, they've identified three new gene targets that they're going to target, where they want to interrupt this meiosis process earlier on. Because what happens is as the meiosis is happening, the process is going on, you're actually within the testes, there's a blood testes barrier forms to basically protect the sperm cells, so it can make drug delivery quite hard because you've got to get through that. So if you can start attacking the process earlier, you might not have that problem. And so that's what the three new gene targets are about. And then, you know, they're looking at spinning out a company in the next couple of years because they want to keep the R&D going and actually try and get something to market. So they're like, you're not going to see it anywhere soon, but they're kind of aiming to have a patch or an injection of something that uses this approach.
Exciting. There's a lot of I do like the classic, oh, this didn't work for something, but it might work for something else.
Yeah, no, and that's what happens with a lot of drug development. They often will look at what else does it work for. And then there's like the famous examples of like Viagra where, oh, it works for something else and we can make way more money, so let's market it for that.
Yeah, if it gets it made, but Yeah, what else have we got?
So then also on the drug trial sort of aspect, where they basically a failed drug meant that they had to go back to the drawing board and better understand things. And so this is the story of nerve growth factor and osteoarthritis. So osteoarthritis, it affects 528 million people worldwide. And as the populations get older, that's just going to get more and more because this is the disease that basically affects your joints. And so we typically characterize it as your cartilage on the end of your joints is degrading. So you kind of think about your bones just start grinding and it's really painful. It's kind of, it's a bit more complex than that, and then it's a whole joint disease. But one of the things that had gone into human trials was about blocking the pain mediators of osteoarthritis so that people didn't feel as much pain. And it had been identified that nerve growth factor was one of these key mediators of this pain, so they had some antibodies basically to block the nerve growth factor. And it worked well for some people. They didn't feel so much pain. But some people actually ended up developing really rapid progressive osteoarthritis, and so they put a halt to the human trials.
Yeah, not exactly ideal.
No, not at all, right? Really not ideal. And they were like, why? We've got no idea what was going on here. And so they've had to go back to the drawing board and go, okay, what is nerve growth factor actually doing? And so by, you know, because we tried to block it, so maybe we should better understand what it was doing in the first place. And so nerve growth factor is also called neurotrophin, and it's basically this really specialized protein that's critical to the development of our nerves, basically, so that we can sense things or that we have fight and flight response and these sort of things. So when we, in the embryonic development, really, really important once we kind of become adults, it's more we see it as this key mediator of pain responses, like for conditions like OA, or when we have inflammation, the levels go up. So what this research study did was they basically injected, again, mice once a week for about 4 weeks. Then they had a control group where they just injected them. So you're basically trying to keep the treatment of the mice as similar as possible, and you've just changed the chemical involved. And they just watched, like they observed the joints, what happened. And so what they found in these mice that were injected with this nerve growth factor, the joint swelled, and so the joint lining was actually becoming inflamed, and it became thicker, and it was developing scar tissue. None of these things are good. The cartilage looked fine. There was no sort of visible changes, but the bone underneath the cartilage became more dense. They started to get these bony growths. You also got pain-sensing fibers grew new branches into the lining and into the bony growths, so you had more pain sensors, so your pain sensitivity increased. And then also they did some genetic analyses, and they found that basically the genes associated with nerve growth, scarring and bone formation were upregulated. You know, that makes sense because that's what they saw was happening. And that it was particularly in the what are called the fibroblast cells. So these are the cells that are kind of in the synovial lining, so the lining of your joint. And they're basically supposed to keep things healthy, and obviously they were being infected by this. And so they basically came to the conclusion, wow, okay, this nerve growth factor has a major effect on the joint. We still don't really know what happened in the study and why blocking it caused all these issues, but we need to understand this a lot more, and particularly how it changes with age. So, yeah.
There's something there.
Yeah, that was good. I think they were a bit shocked at how things went.
Almost a brutal sounding set of side effects there.
Yeah, I didn't. So one of the things that would be interesting that I didn't really look into was kind of the concentrations involved with what they injected relative to what you get in the body typically. And I'm sure there's a lot of work there to do.
But anyway, wow.
Yeah.
Yay, medicine though.
Yeah.
Osteoarthritis. Yeah. Hey, if I can avoid osteoarthritis, I'll be a happy man.
Yep. I totally agree. Like, it's something to really avoid.
Yeah. What have we got last?
The last one is super exciting. Well, I find it super exciting. So there's about the kakapo.
I find it super exciting.
Yeah. So I didn't actually realize, but kakapo is te reo for night parrot, which is quite appropriate, right?
Yeah.
It's a nocturnal parrot. So, yeah. Critically endangered. So in 1996, there were just 51 adults. Typical New Zealand story.
Yeah.
Predators introduced, we've got habitat destruction, and we had hunting. And so that's what really obliterated their numbers. So there's been major efforts since then to bring the numbers up. And we are currently at an estimated 235 adult kakapo.
It's an increase.
It's an increase, right? It does seem like not much of an increase, but that is actually is quite major.
That's a lot of pairs.
Yeah. So there's 78 nesting females at the moment. And so this year has been an absolute wonderful year for hatchlings. So they've reported that 105 chicks have been born. And that's the most since they started recording 30 years ago. I think, was it 2019 was the previous record, and I think that was 85 from memory. And this comes from this year, there were 256 eggs laid. So there's one supposedly still in the incubator. 98 chicks, so 105 chicks hatched, 98 are still alive. So, of course, you know, they do as much as they can to keep these things alive, but it doesn't always work. Not all the eggs hatch. Four have gone to Dunedin Wildlife Hospital for tending to keep them going. Now, these chicks, so we don't actually classify a kakapo as an adult till it's 150 days old. And so that's going to happen about mid-July. And once that hits, that's when they do the official count. Mm. So fingers crossed for those 98 that are still going.
That's a big increase.
Yeah, yeah, no, totally. At the moment, the oldest is 50 days old. So we've got a little way to go, but it's, yeah, super awesome. All this breeding, most of this breeding happens on these three predator-free islands, Whenuahau or Codfish Island, that's just off Stewart Island or Rarotonga Island, and two in Fiordland. Mm. And why this is even more exciting when you consider how difficult this is. These birds only breed every 2 to 4 years. And that typically coincides when there's a lot of food. So when the remu are producing a lot of berries that they can feed on and this sort of thing. And so, yeah, they're not breeding every year, and the females typically only have one chick per breeding season. So it is a lot of effort. So every chick is really, really precious. And you see these things when you see stories. So, like, there's a story of the Auckland zoo vet going to Codfish Island and looking at a nest and coming across a little chick that was looking a bit floppy and a bit purple in there. And so he did CPR. Like, he's like tiny CPR, you know, like you can just picture it with his finger and like just breathing gently on his mouth. Revived it, got it, you know, like it kind of bounced back and now it's living. And so, yeah, and he's got a few stories of that sort of thing. Yeah, and so there's kind of, there's this really massive asset to save them. There's this year, you could actually watch one hatch live because Doc have set up kakapo cam. So it's a nest on Codfish Island of Rakiura. There's the female that they have there. So she actually had two hatchlings this year. One's been fostered out. And so, yeah, made, like, bird nerds around the world were, like, watching this, super excited. You can go watch the footage on YouTube. Still live streaming, so I had to check it out this morning. It's very cool. Yeah, so that she had chicks on the 24th of Feb, so it's still young. Second one in March, and yeah, so really just fingers crossed that these survive, because that's
good news, hopefully, at least.
Hopefully
good news. Yeah. Wow, amazing. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thanks, Kushla, for joining us. Thank you, MOTAT, and thank you, Science. Journey into MOTAT this Sunday and spend the day amongst the grass, soil, and garden with live day farming.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.